Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Oh, you gave up. I was going to let it go.
Y'all know what that means. It's Mark Order Podcast time here on the Mark Order Podcast YouTube channel. Good episode tonight. Lots to dig into. Full house tonight. Call me Michelle Tanner because we've got a full house. We've got Ryan back, unfortunately. We've got Joe. Joe, what's on your shirt? I wanted to ask you before we went live. I said, I'll wait for on air.
It's my
chicken tendies shirt.
Yeah,
I'd be wearing it during the women's match. That's all I'll say. But thank you for hanging out with us. We see you already piling in the chat. We see Lord Kev. We see Fernando. We see Matthew Hooks. We see Scott George and Big G and Pieces and Taylor. Oh my! Thank you guys for hanging out with us. It's been a while since our own Triangle of Madness was all present. Hi Kylie. Hi fam. What's going on, fellas? Ryan, how are you?
Good. I'm glad to see the triangle back together.
It's not how triangles work.
L7.
We're a bunch of L7 weenies. So that's what we are. But Mercedes didn't know what a triangle was earlier tonight. So I'm not alone. You are not alone in that. You are alone in hey, do the Aussie open hand gesture. It's just like a very simple, but it's all right. It's all right. You'll get there. You'll learn. Not a lot of United Empire tonight. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but Joe, how you doing? How's life?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Life is good. Apparently Taylor Swift has an album coming out.
I know. I'm wearing orange.
I'm waiting for her to appear on our podcast next.
We could use the 1.2 million bump as far as subscribers go or viewers. Wouldn't be the worst. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be a worst. Even if just Travis Kelce showed up, I would take either one of them at this point. That would be fine. I'd even throw a hot $20 bill their way for that one. I would.
Worth it.
More people piling in the chat. LaRon, Kylie, Greg Cherry, hello, how are you? Ryan, noted Swifty, obviously, wearing orange, has nothing to do with the Flyers.
Is this her color?
So here's what I've learned. The only fan base may be weirder at putting clues together to things than wrestling fans are Swifties. But the album cover was orange and sparkly. And then there's all this TS12 lore, but it's her 12th album, I think. So they'd be on the 12th date of her tour, she was wearing an orange sparkly dress or whatever. They're it puts wrestling fans to shame. And I thought they were the absolute nerdiest, but I think Ryan is no selling it, but he's been doing this research ever since she put that out.
I didn't know that was her color, and I am more than happy to be showcasing my support.
I mean, I think the album's called Life of a Showgirl, so if there's any album you're going to be able to relate to.
Mm-hmm. Jazz hands.
Jazz hands. 100%. 100%. But we've got a lot to dig into with this Dynamite. How you doing, Ryan? We haven't had you here. It's been a minute. You were dog sitting. You had alleged family in town. How's things? How's the haps? How's the go going?
The go is going, and it's going well. I'm good. I am familyless, dogless tonight, so I'm
that far sounds more so relaxed. Lonely. Out of context.
Honestly, I'm okay with it.
My dog ran
away.
Sad country song over there.
Women, trucks, and dogs. That's what country songs are about.
Well, I mean, like, that's where Taylor Swift started, and you're such a Swiftie that obviously you would know so much about country.
Well, I was Romeo, she was Juliet.
Nailed it. Nailed it. What's going on with you, Joe? Anything fun happening?
Oh, not really. Nothing too much other than, you know, getting ready to go into football season here coming up, but, you know.
I feel like everyone's in the, like, late summer lull where everyone's like, I have stuff planned for the future. I had stuff in behind me, but the next 2 weeks are just this, like, weird, it's too hot out, but whatever.
Apparently it's fast to school time because I feel like all my social media is just people flooding it with pictures of their kids.
Yeah, like, it's nuts how much, like, so Seton Hall always went to school after Labor Day or, like, at Labor Day. So we were always late anyway, and so I've always just, like, forgotten that this is, like, prime back-to-school time because I wasn't even buying my dorm room bullshit yet at this point.
Did you sing the back-to-school song?
The Billy Madison one?
Damn it, you knew exactly where I was going.
Back to school, prove to dad that I'm not a fool.
That's literally where I was going with it.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
Let me ask you a quick question. When you did growing up and you had a, like, your first day of school picture that your parents took of you, did you stand in front of a door, a tree, a rock? What was the staple for your background?
So we had, when I was, like, young, it was, like, in the door of the bus.
Oh.
And then as we got a little older, my mom had, like, those seasonal flags that you put out, and we had a school bus flag, and then that became the land marker for a while. It was an adorable flag. I actually bought her it because she loved that, and it got we had a storage unit while my parents were between houses, and it got flooded, and that was one of the things that got lost, and I was like, I wonder if it's just, like, on eBay somewhere, and I found it. But that became the like stakeholder of the thing we took pictures in front of up until, like, high school. But what about you?
I think I was just in front of the front door.
Yeah.
Anything, yeah.
Ryan?
You were homeschooled, weren't you?
No, we would go. So we left my house out the back door. So it'd be, like, in the backyard before we made a right to go out the gate.
Okay. Respect.
That's where but I only remember doing that for, like, the first couple years. So, and then obviously my mom's like, all right, now you're too old. We're going to stop that.
Yeah. Especially you're a boy. So it's like,
yeah,
I feel like the girlies got it the most, but that's what's up. Well, we have a lot to discuss. I'm glad that the chat is here. A lot of developments that happened on AEW today. A lot of Forbidden Door developments that are coming together very late, but this is what happens when you run the same time as the G1. I feel like you have to make sure people get through things healthy, and we'll see what the rest of the card shapes up to be. But we got some forward motion today that was very good. But we also had some good news on the AEW side this week. The biggest piece of it being that Kyle Fletcher, who is the prototype of a star, I don't know if you guys know this, but he signed a contract extension. His contract was not up for renewal, but they were like, hey, we like having you around here. If we give you a bunch of money, will you stick around longer? He said, why not? Darn it. Which is great news. I feel like we've talked about this before. It's like wrestling promotions and talent are almost like this weird game of Tinder. And it feels like when you both swipe right on each other in the right environment, really special things can happen. And I think Kyle Fletcher would do great in WWE. I think he's a fit for the future of AEW. And as we've seen, like Sammy Guevara's not really like a pillar anymore. Danny Garcia, like a lot of his momentum fell off a cliff. So I think a lot of people thought Ricky Starks was going to be around as someone to like carry the flag forward. And that, a lot of that stuff just didn't materialize. So as they're finding new stakes in the ground, I think this is a really, really good one. I'll let either of you jump in with any thoughts on the re-signing of Kyle Fletcher.
Go for it, Ron.
Okay. What a dumb move. Why would you want a 26, 27-year-old star who can go in the ring and talk on the mic and has the look. Like, I don't know why you'd want that. It just seems like a waste.
Yeah, like, people are calling him the next Ospreay, and I'm like, is that a good thing? I don't know. Yeah,
seriously, who wants that? He really has some of, like, the perfect look for a wrestler, especially since he's bulked up a little bit. He kind of reminds me of, like, Randy Orton, and I always thought Randy Orton was one of the, like, prototypical best
stars
wrestling. Yeah, but, like,
he looked like a girl.
Yes, he was a protostar of how a wrestler, you picture a wrestler to look, you know. So I'm just glad they didn't wait around and play games and they saw that they had a star. You're right, they have had a couple guys like Daniel Garcia, who you're like, ah, this is going to be it, and then it cools down. Obviously, that's the fear with anyone, but like Garcia, and I think they both fall in this, you can heat those two guys up. Like, that's the cool thing about Kyle Fletcher. If he went cold for 3 months, it's 1 week and he's heated up again. That's how good he is. And Daniel Garcia is the same way. When you're at that level, you give these guys like a week or two of TV time and suddenly they're the most over guy in the company again.
Yeah, and to your point, Ryan, like, Kyle Fletcher is 26, right? And Daniel Garcia is also 26. Like, these guys are not even sniffing their prime yet, but it feels like Kyle Fletcher's prime might be here pretty early, because as much as he feels like the future, I think there's a lot of people that think he feels like the now as well. I'm also kind of glad that those conversations have subsided, because it feels like the future is important, but so is the now. But, like, you have, like, Takeshita is not even in, like, the top five guys right now in AEW, and that's insane to me. Like, he is so, 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 so good, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, this roster is so deep that, like, the future, the present, it's like, it'll all kind of take care of itself if you just keep the product on track and keep the right pieces around, Fletcher being one of those guys. But, like, you look right now, Ospreay, Swerve, Hangman, Kenny Omega, like, there's such a deep talent pool. And what I've appreciated is, well, some of those top guys have been off television, and that's just those ones, Eddie Kingston, Jay White, Pac, like, they have a deep enough roster that it hasn't, like, I think the product's been great the past few weeks. So that's been really good. But Joe, how do you feel about locking up the proto star here?
It's always nice when a company is proactive in locking down a future talent and not stringing it along. And I mean, especially with the growth Fletcher's had, physically, character wise, on the mic, he really broke himself out from being, you know, an Ospreay clone of sorts, you know. So, smart move on their part. And whenever I hear protostar, I always think of pro stars. If you remember that old, the old cartoon.
Oh my gosh, I do. Yeah. I do.
So,
you know what else I remember?
Old man reference. What's that?
To say hi to Jesse Ozog. Ryan, you okay? You guys take an anti-histamine.
I'm good. Perfect.
It's the eye over there.
Nope.
Well, some other news that is AEW adjacent, but we can talk about here. A couple of free agents on the WWE side that I don't know if either of them come here. But Ashanti the Adonis is now free. I'm guessing he goes to TNA. Because he's got friends over there. And I feel like I also just feel like he's a fit there. First class with AJ Francis, who was previously in the same stable as him. They just lost Casey Navarro to a knee surgery. He's going to be out for a while. So I feel like Ashanti being able to step in there because he has no non-compete would be a great call. And Karrion Kross, a lot of buzz around him. I feel like he might end up back in WWE, but that situation gets weirder the more that goes on. There are some, we'll say, tensions between certain people in AEW and Karrion Kross and Scarlett. But what's so weird was he was kind of like just finally clicking in with WWE audiences and everybody. I think kind of felt like the momentum was starting to rise, and then they just didn't renew his contract. And from my understanding, and this does not come from Sean, and this is not like a report of any kind that I can confirm, but I was told by someone who would have like pretty sincere access to Karrion Kross that he was given a contract without dates attached to it and no mention of Scarlet. And I don't know how you sign a contract without dates when you have a number that's given to you. Like, how am I able to measure what the value is if I don't know how many dates I'm working? It's kind of nuts. So that gets weirder and weirder. They could shoot themselves into a work if they wanted. I don't feel like either of them coming over to AEW is necessarily the call. But if either of you do, I'll give you the floor.
I do not. I think if he doesn't end up resigning with WWE, then go use the indie circuit like he was doing. Keep, you know, building upon that groundswell of the fan base he had. And then, yeah, make the WWE pay him and give him a contract that, you know, fits the dates and all the things that he's looking for.
I will say he has some odd views, as I feel like most wrestlers do, specifically about vaccines and the like. But I also think, like, as far as I know, interpersonally, he's pretty beloved. I know on the indies, there was an indie talent he worked that told me, like, the first thing that Karrion Kross did when he was working him was like, hey, what hurts today? Like, are you injured? Are you banged up? Like, what kind of match can we construct and work around that's not going to hurt you worse? And he was like, I'd never been asked that question. And it like just gave him immediate relief in that regard. Like, relief you don't know you need kind of thing. And he was like, actually, I do have this fucked up elbow thing going on, and it would be great if I didn't have to do any work around it. Like, he's a really, really considerate dance partner in that way. I know Moxley likes him. I don't know if that will be enough to get him in the company, especially Tony Khan being weary of signing anybody from WWE of late. And when you look at like the evidence, like, Speedball took to the AEW crowd quickly. Kevin Knight took to the AEW crowd quickly. Kyle Fletcher, obviously blossoming in front of our eyes, came from New Japan. Like, it feels like the acts that get more connected with the AEW crowd are the ones that don't necessarily come from WWE anymore. Like, obviously Moxley, obviously Swerve, obviously Tony Storm. But I think we've seen a lot come over and it also not click. But yeah, the chat pointing out Alex Windsor. So I think they'll be picky choosy. There'll be exceptions for sure. Jesse Ozark saying, except Bailey. Like, there are some people that are just such mega stars that of course you wouldn't not entertain the idea, but it's been an interesting thing. Ryan, do you see Karrion Kross or Ashante Zay Adonis coming over?
So neither for both of them. I think Ashante, like you said, TNA just makes the most sense for his character and who he was. Unless he went out into the indie world and just started to crush it and kind of showed more than, and not that showed him to be different, I should say, than I saw from him in WWE. He just seems to fit the TNA style so much better, which isn't a good or bad thing. That's just style. Karrion Kross, I can't see it. Obviously there's well-known some personality conflicts out there, but also I just don't see his fit. He doesn't seem like, I don't know, it doesn't seem like the time for him, I guess you'd say. Like, he kind of, I think, would get lost immediately in the AEW universe, and that just doesn't make sense to me. I also don't get his whole situation.
He's also realistically He's also 40, realistically, too. Like, I don't think he's 40.
So he's a young man.
He works, he is in WWE standards. He should just be getting his main event push now. But, like, I think AEW's thinking stars of the future, because they kind of have stars of the current down, right? Like, you got Will Ospreay, you got Kenny Omega, you got Swerve, you got Hangman, you got so many guys. Takeshita, like, there's the Callis family alone is brimming. So I think even just his age alone, I don't know like what you're looking to do. And I also don't know if they want to go there, because I don't think they would even feel like it's a character fit. But
yeah, I don't.
The chat pointing out Tekla as well being a good fit coming over from Japan. I got to talk to her. She's very, very tiny. I saw her at WrestleCon and interviewed her for about 20 seconds. And she is very endearing and very tiny.
I'm always shocked at how tiny so many of these wrestlers are. That's male or female. So many of them are shockingly small. And then there's the occasionally shockingly big, like Kyle Fletcher, shockingly tall.
Yes. Yeah. His is even more fun because him dating Sky Blue, who is, I mean, like a foot shorter than him.
Yep. She's like at his hip, but
amazing.
Yeah. All I'm going to say about the crossing, because I don't have another place to say it, is I don't love this new world of, oh, it's a work, but it's not a work, but it's no fun. I don't find it interesting. It doesn't add anything for me. I think it would backfire more than it helps. It just feels like, what are we doing? Like you've created this world of trying to prove you're smarter than everyone by what you're doing, when in reality you're just flying by the seat of your pants. I don't understand it.
I think Jeremy Lambert at Fightful said this on the morning show over there in the weeds, and I thought it was a really good point that like the goodwill that you're taking all the scenic route to and trying to manufacture, you could just get by just re-signing the people. Like if you just announced you re-signed Karrion Kross with the momentum he has right now, people would be like, oh, sick. Like, great, they're listening to us. You don't have to take this insanely roundabout way. The R-Truth thing, I don't know what to tell people. Like, it was a shoot. He was already talking to GCW. He was already talking to TNA. And the Seth Rollins thing, I think working the locker room is a fucking terrible idea.
Well, I'm saying, like, even with R-Truth, even across turns into the same thing as R-Truth, where it was a shoot into a work, like, started real, and then they've pretended it wasn't. But Jeremy's point of, oh, you can make good manufacture better goodwill, and I agree with that. My thing is, I still think they're in the negative, because all the negative press you get beforehand is not outdone by the bringing him back. Because a lot of people still look around and go, you should have never let him go.
No, well, so, that was Jeremy's point, was like, if you just re-signed them, you would have the actual goodwill. Like, you don't need to take this extra layer, which is extremely silly. Extremely silly, but I'll tell you what's silly. This little podcast, we have a good time over here, and it's with the silliest geese in the gander on the Shining Wizards Network. We got silliness all over this channel, their channel, this, that, and the other. And we're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna let a commercial break tell you about the shows on the Shining Wizards Network, because I'm not gonna sit here and talk for 10 minutes at you guys about them.
Before we go to commercial, can I just tell you the tweet I just read from John Silver?
Always.
So MJF tweeted out, you ain't seen nothing yet. And John Silver quote tweeted, I've seen two girls poop into a cup and eat it. You telling me that's nothing?
God bless. Jesus.
God, dear God.
God bless Johnny Hungy. And with that, I don't think there's a better segue to talk about the Shining Wizards podcast and the Shining Wizards Network.
Truly. All right, put the overlay, and then I got to find the music.
We'd like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in every Monday night to listen to The Shining Wizards. If you'd like to continue to support us outside of listening, we've got a few ways for you to do that. If you shop at Amazon, go over to amazon.shiningwizards.com, do your shopping as usual, and when you make your purchase, a little bit of that purchase price will go back to support the show. If you like to wear t-shirts, merch.shiningwizards.com will take you to our Pro Wrestling Tees store, where we've got over a dozen great designs from over 11 years of professional wrestling podcasting. You can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast, where each and every week we call out your name as one of our show producers, and the more you support us, the more things that you're entitled to receive, and believe me, they are fantastic. If you can't support us monetarily, if you don't shop at Amazon, that's absolutely fine. Continue to listen to us wherever you listen to us on the World Wide Web, and make sure you like, rate, review, subscribe, do all that good stuff. Doesn't cost you anything, helps us out, and we can continue to bring you the love fest that is The Shining Wizards.
What's up, folks? It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, inviting all of you to check out the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Join us as we cover all things current in the world of pro wrestling, as well as paying homage to the old school, the squared circle. So listen in and find out why we are the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. Find us on all social media platforms and anywhere you get your podcast from. And as always, we are the proudest members of the Shining Wizards Network and Rant Entertainment Media.
Are you tired of being lied to every day by the mainstream media?
Do you want to know what's really going on in the world?
Do you want to make up your own mind about things, not be told what to think or say?
Then listen to Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly anti-PC look at the world of entertainment and current events, brought to you without censorship or filters.
You can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts, BitChute, and on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And also, we're a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Got 30 minutes to kill?
Come check out 30 Screams or Less, where we review a horror movie in 30 minutes or less. We cover new movies and old ones, too.
We'll give our honest thoughts on the movie, good or shit, as well as a rating of each one that we watch.
New episodes weekly, available on the Shining Wizards Network and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Corey.
Come check us out at 30 Screams or Less.
G'day guys, my name is Thomas, one half of the Broadcast Podcast. With our podcast, we go back and watch wrestling events from WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, AEW, and many other wrestling promotions. You can check us out on Twitter at The Broadcast, that's THEBROKAST, and you can also download all episodes on Apple Podcast, CastBox, Castro, and many other podcast apps.
You like your music heavy? Then check out Radioactive Metal on the Shining Wizards Network. For over 16 years now, Radioactive Metal has been one of the longest running podcasts. Over the years, we've interviewed some legendary metal acts, had some awesome discussions, and cranked a hell of a lot of tunes. So join your cool Uncle Snowy and his co-host Aaron for the audio mosh pit that is Radioactive Metal here on the Shining Wizards Network.
Well, the action is underway!
What's up, everyone? When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure to check out Wrestling Night in Canada. If we're not recording another kick-ass podcast,
or playing in punk bands,
or recording kick-ass heavy metal albums,
then we're sitting back, we're grabbing a couple brews, and going over everything to do in the world of pro wrestling.
Because we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.
The Mark Order Podcast is the only show you need if you're looking for dedicated coverage of everything AEW on the Shining Wizards Network. Join us live on YouTube every Wednesday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite to chat along with the show. If you can't join us live, listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on all social channels at Mark Order Pod and use the hashtag #JoinTheMarkOrder, because if you don't find us,
we will find you.
I'm Kevin Rogue.
I'm Al Day.
And we're a couple of down under pounders that co-host Rogue Day Dots, an action figure collecting podcast where we talk about, well, just about anything that tickles our fancy at any given moment.
We're grumpy old men, and sometimes people get on our nerves. And when you get on our nerves, guess what? You get off the lawn.
Get off my lawn, asshole! We also go on a little bit of a mission. We go back and we're grading every wrestling figure line that's out there. I'm talking LJNs, I'm talking Jax, I'm talking Hasbros. Who doesn't like a little Hulkaplex? It's a Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production found on the Shining Wizards Network.
I'm Duke Bags.
Kevin Rogue.
And together we are the co-hosts of your Duke and Rogue. If you want to hear about some terrible wrestling shows, we got you covered.
Well, we talk about good ones, too.
We're currently talking about the death of WCW.
I know what we're fucking talking about! Sometimes we get guest spots, like from the Taskmaster.
I like to listen to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast. They're funny guys. I like when they talk about the Narch plows. I like Narch plows. That's a good move. And I like the Dungeon of Doom. You know, sometimes I call my butt the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
Let me tell you a little bit about my favorite wrestling podcast. All right. It's a podcast with two men. Two men, Duke Banks, Kevin Rowe. They talk about professional wrestling. It's a man's sport. All right. And who better to talk about a man's sport than Duke Banks? Oklahoma.
And once in a while, Vince Russo stops by.
Bro, you piece of shit! If you're not listening to the Year of Duke and Rowe podcast in the back with the boys, piece of shit, I don't know what you're doing.
You got a slight one in there.
If you're a man, you're talking about something only a man can do. You're talking about slide one in there. Bro, take the time to slide one in there. All right, bro, you piece of shit, slide one in there.
A Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production that you can find on the Shining Wizards Network.
All right, we are back. I am with Ryan, I am with Joe, and they get no hose, so they are stuck with me. They're not short, nor are they bald, but that is what it is. That is what it is.
Ryan's not tall.
He's not short. He's deceptively tall. He's like, you're like 6 foot? 6'1"?
Yeah, what the hell, Joe? Okay, just because you're abnormally tall.
Averagely tall.
How tall are you? I'm 5'8", so I'm tall for a gal.
Flat-footed, I'm 6'2".
That is tall.
Yeah.
That is straight up tall. I'll take it. You're taller than a lot of...
The average American man height is 5'9". I'm above average. Let's just let it go.
Well, get your inches where you can. Let's talk some AEW Dynamite. I see in the chat they're plugging my Tekla interview, so thank you.
That was Joe. I wouldn't help you out.
Much appreciated, but I did interview her. She's very tiny and very, very sweet, which is she is not like her character. She is not like, oh, this person turned up to 11. Mina Shirakawa, who she was standing next to, very much seems... seems that way. But enough about me and all of my wonderful experiences interviewing stars from around the world of wrestling. Let's talk about AEW Dynamite tonight. Boy, commentary needs a kick in the nuts when Ian Riccaboni is not there or Nigel McGuinness is not there. And quite frankly, Nigel McGuinness has a very important match to be getting ready for. So. But let's talk about this opening segment with MJF and Hangman. Let's talk, dumbasses, because this was great. We have MJF calling himself the main antagonist and accusing Hangman Page of being a false hero who's hiding behind fan adoration. He says that he's going to crucify Adam Page, keeps calling him Seabiscuit. And Hangman says, do you know what happened in that movie? He wins, dumbass. But Hangman says that he knows his own faults, unlike MJF, and he's not afraid to face them. And MJF is trying to basically suffocate his and says, like, just cash in your contract now. Don't be a coward. And MJF gets goaded into executing his contract, which I am glad about because I didn't think they needed to double down on this. What I love with this is, like, MJF is... I was watching this and my genuine reaction was like, no wonder like all the old heads don't like AEW, because this is the most anti-toxic masculinity program in the world. MJF is like this angry guy trying to suffocate his emotions and do anything not to show cracks in his armor. And all of Hangman's strength is through his vulnerability and the fact that he's faced everything about him. I'm like, no wonder all this generation of people who are taught to suffocate this are like, I don't like this stuff. But this was really, really good. I like the idea that MJF is got goaded into it. I think that's important because I don't need to see him get two title shots in a row. Like, that just kind of feels like overkill, where I think there's a lot of valuable things that can be done with Hangman. I also love that everybody is locked in on MJF, Mystico, Mark Briscoe, Hangman, Hurt Syndicate. Like, there's a lot of people that are breathing down his neck right now. And I think that works for the story and where his character seems to be going. We'll start with Joe because he bothered to show up last week. what did you think of this opening segment? I feel like this version of MJF is the shit I like. Less of the cheap heat fan stuff and more of the juice that we get to see.
Yeah, like, and you know, from the get-go of this whole promo, it kind of shows the beauty of how professional wrestling is a performance art. It's an extension of classic theater of the protagonist and antagonist. And I think it does a really nice job of telling a story when it really leans into that and gives you a little bit more substance. And the more I listened to the promo and more I listened from Heyman, it really felt like Heyman was kind of asking the same thing of MJF that Mox was asking of someone. It felt like to me, looking for someone to a challenger who's worthy, who stepped up, who overcame things, albeit in a different way. But I just feel like that's kind of what Heyman is doing to MJF.
I like it. I like the comparison. Well done. A plus on the essay. Ryan, my college flunky, what do you what do you think of this opening segment?
So I like that Hangman is a smart face. I always appreciate that. That to me is so underrated, such an underrated thing that's been occurring in wrestling lately, which is faces have gotten smarter. I feel like there was a good 15 to 20 year period there where they were always just so dumb.
They're getting like real dumb in the other promotion again.
Well, they were smart in the 90s when like they were the anti-hero, but they were still the good guys. Like Stone Cold was always getting one up and stuff like that. The Rock when he was face. Then they got real dumb again. And now I'm at least in AEW, they're getting smart. And I just appreciate that. It makes it easier to cheer for these guys when I'm not sitting there going, "You idiot, what are you doing?" Hangman's right about Seabiscuit. He not only did he win, he got to retire and just get laid all the time. Like, how is that an insult?
That is a phenomenal way of life. Would sign up for it.
Honestly. Yeah. Oh, I've made millions and now I just get laid. Oh, I'm now sorry.
Oh, you have a bunch of sex. How terrible. Oh, are you a millionaire? Rough.
Yeah. So I appreciate that Hangman has done everything in his power to make this very smart. And I kind of like that. The wrestling fan in me was expecting Hangman to be the one to get worked up and let MJF have his title match without having to call in the thing. And I love that they reversed it and MJF got worked up and had to do it because that is how it should be. Stop. Again, I love that he's smart. So I'm going to say this is always make your baby, not always, but 90% of the time your baby face should be smart. Unless your baby face is a dumb character.
Sure.
They should be hard. So that's just making me cheer for Hangman a lot more. And MJF, when MJF gets interesting is when his opponent gets interesting. And that's not a knock on MJF. It's just the truth of what I've seen, which is he tends to vibe off of whoever he's interacting with. So
sure,
if they're not giving him more in-depth stuff, he is always going to be on the surface. If they give him, like Hangman's giving him a lot more, he then gives a lot more back. And I'm hoping this just keeps playing out that way because that's the most interesting version of MJF.
I feel like we usually see a progression from MJF too of like cheap heat stuff to the real stuff. Like as feuds go on. And he's kind of gotten away from that. And what's cool is with Hangman, that was never the case. He just came out immediately when they had their first match with like the Hangman did nothing wrong stuff because he was right. And he had to capitalize on it in that moment with Hangman because he was pivoting to his redemption like at that time. So I'm with you. Like MJF at his most interesting is what you were saying. And to your point about dumb baby faces, it's like wrestling can't figure out a way to make an underdog without making them an idiot. And I always hate that because I'm like, you're an underdog because you put yourself in that situation because you're dumb. So I agree, yeah. Like Swerve preempting the Death Riders with the numbers game, I felt like made him look like a smart baby face. Like I agree with you that that is an important and underrated thing in pro wrestling. But Hangman Page,
I do have one question.
See you at Forbidden Door, dumbass. What's your question?
It's a question that could turn into a fear. So they seem to have literally just dropped the Hurt Syndicate MJF story. Like he got kicked out and it's dead. There's been no follow up. There's been no anything. Which is my question is that just their plan to leave that dead? Or, and my fear, because I actually really would not like this outcome, not just from like, oh, how dare you, but just I don't think it's a fun story beat, which is he is actually secretly still part of the Hurt Syndicate and he uses them to beat Hangman.
Much more likely, I think the Hurt Syndicate would cost him. And then I think it's possible MJF would cost them their tag titles back. Like, I can think you could see a nasty back and forth and then Bobby Lashley and MJF maybe having a one-on-one out of that. That's a program I would like. That's a very long program, though. So I don't know if that was expedited because they just wanted to move on from it or if they expedited that because they're trying to get some MJFs in, like, 5 programs. So they might have just been like, we got to get one of them in gear. But I would actually kind of like if the Hurt Syndicate, because the thing that they were dancing around was Bobby Lashley's like, I'm not your fucking stooge. I'm Bobby Lashley. Like, I'm not here to, like, help you out and play little brother to you. That ain't how this goes. So if he was just like, fuck you, you don't deserve a title shot. I want a title shot and takes Max out. And then MJF, because he's the heel, but wronged, turns around and costs them their titles. I think that would be a productive way to get the titles off the Hurt Syndicate and to protect Max in a loss. Now, the way the tag programs are progressing, that feels like it's way too long term, unless they were going to turn around right away and do that at all out. But you're right that they were like ghosts today, despite there being a ton of tag programs going on. Mm-hmm. So we will have to wait and see. Well, our first match was a hell of a lot of fun. Jon Moxley was doing incredible work on media. If you missed it, he was local because they were in Ohio, and he compared AEW to a Hot Pocket and then eventually said Kevin Knight's brain was going to be the Hot Pocket. But he was like, nobody just like put a Hot Pocket in the microwave too long and it just like, blah, and it explodes and gets messy. He was like, that's kind of like what you're going to get wrestling, like it's gonna be wild and messy and all over the place and exploding everywhere. But this match was great. It was about 13-14 minutes long, somewhere in between there, and I feel like it was, man, this is what I wanted out of Jon Moxley literally always all the time. Like this kind of in-ring confidence shooter. Him and Kevin Knight just, I felt like, also had very good chemistry tonight. Like Kevin Knight drop kicks, aerial moves, Moxley slowing everything down, grinding, eye gouging, submissions, that huge top rope, over the top rope lariat, and then of course the Yuta distraction, letting Mox recover. We get that triangle choke, the inverted triangle choke, and Moxley wins. Post-match, BCC and Jet Speed beat down until Darby Allin arrives with another body bag. Claudio hits the ring, beating down Darby, zips him into the body bag before tossing him. I am tired of the Death Riders, but if you're going to do it, I would much rather it be done like this. Like, this actually feels very productive. And I think they're still leading probably to a Death Riders, like, falling apart situation. I just now am convinced they're waiting for Eddie Kingston to be able to get back for that. But I don't mind this because, like, Kevin Knight tapped to Mox today. Yuta just provided a distraction to give him a breather. That feels so much different to me than, like, they ran in at the end and blah, blah, blah. Like, this I really, really liked what we actually got out of this program today. Ryan, we'll start with you because we started with Joe last time, and it's only fair that I ping pong back and forth with you. What do you think of what we got tonight?
First of all, does everyone else think of Jim Gaffigan when they hear Hot Pocket?
Hot Pocket. Hot
Pocket. Like, just like I hear his voice doing it every time.
Always.
I don't even hear the song first, which is what it was. You know, it's him doing it. So there's that. They gave Kevin Knight a lot of time. They let him show off, which is awesome. He's very talented. And I think Tony or maybe someone said that they didn't expect him to be quite as involved as he's been in, but he filled in some roles that he wasn't supposed to. And he's just taken that opportunity, kind of like we'll talk about later with Queen Aminata, where a role they weren't supposed to play and they've thrived. You know, Moxley showing he doesn't need blood and all to be entertaining. You know, he can be a damn good wrestler, and this was and he played off Kevin Knight's strengths very well. He let Kevin Knight do his things while he played the brute in the match. Am I the only one? You know what, Jesse? I'm not wrong. Both Joe and Kate agreed with me.
Doesn't make you right. Just saying.
I may be right. You can be the answer too.
Joe, any thoughts while Ryan's?
No, wait. I had an actual comment. I think it's going to be Cesaro who turns and ruins everything.
Think so too, because I think Eddie might come back on boxes.
I got a vibe from him tonight.
I mean, I'm hoping and praying for that because I love Cesaro. Like, and I feel like he deserves to get some shine out of this angle because it's been all Wheeler Yuta. And I also, here's what I want. Like, I like Moxley working face better than I like Moxley working heel. I think Eddie is going to get a tremendous pop when he returns, so he might as well return to a face John Moxley. Him coming in to save Moxley again when the first time that he ever saved him was that exploding wire, barbed wire death match that didn't explode. Like, there's a lot of really fun possibilities there. And Claudio, I love espresso drinking dickhead Claudio. And Eddie Kingston and Claudio can never be on the same side of things. So it's perfect that, like, this whole ecosystem is set up, to your point, Ryan, like, for a Claudio turn. I really, really want that to happen. I really hope that that's the program that Eddie walks back into. But Joseph of the Asias, what did you think of this match? I really appreciate how much, like, John Moxley later in his career has enveloped this jiu-jitsu style into his wrestling instead of just being a brawler. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, this match really highlighted the fact that he's, you know, aside from his usual backstage promos and gang warfares and factions, he can still just be a workhorse in the ring. And it showed that he can put a match on with various types of people. I like the fact that, you know, Kevin Knight, he played the role of a smaller guy, even though he's pretty yoked up already.
Yeah, he's got some size on him.
But him doing a lot of, you know, to your point earlier, jumping off of the turnbuckles, jumping onto the apron to jump off the apron, just a lot of those leverage moves to try to ground Moxley was fun to watch. And I agree. I think Moxley in the end gets the old plastic bag over the head treatment.
Ooh, you think Claudio does it? Claudio and Wheeler?
I think Wheeler does it.
Okay.
Claudio's direction.
Ooh, okay. Not mad about that. Yeah, I like that Kevin Knight. It's so funny because he's with Speedball, right? And so Speedball's like Mr. Agility, but with these really fierce kicks. And I feel like Kevin Knight has been still working that into his repertoire, but a little bit less. So the fact that he got to be like high flyer guy tonight was kind of fun. Well, let's move on to our ladies match of the night. This was so much fun. Their talent rotation is impressive. My thing is, if you're going to settle into this four-match format with only one women's match a show, it can't be the shortest match on the show. And the only reason it wasn't tonight was because we got Adam Copeland and Stokely Hathaway. So if you're only going to give us one and it's going to include this many women, it needs to be longer. This was a 10-minute match, but I'm just from like a timeshare perspective. It's got to be longer, but this was a whole heck of a lot of fun. You had Toni Storm and Athena watching from the stands. I love Athena just like parodying Toni Storm so much. She's been so brilliant at it. Alex Windsor dominating a lot early. I love Mercedes Moné trying to join the, the triangle of madness. She tweeted, I thought it was a prayer circle, which I really liked. But Alex Windsor looking really good in this. We get some hot tags from Willow. She's really fun as a hot tag because she's such a powerhouse, I feel like. Guida Amirata, always shining bright with the minutes she's given. Those strikes are nasty. She hits hard, man. And Alex Windsor locking Sky Blue in a sharpshooter for the win there. Love that Alex Windsor. We don't see a lot of ladies using sharpshooters. Adore Toni Storm being like, Windsor! And her saying, Storm! We got all six of the gals brawling. Storm and Athena trading words. Toni setting a tag match for Scotland, which I think is a fun way to go about things because Athena and Mercedes have been teasing that they're going to be on the same side of things, but they kind of shouldn't. So I'm okay with a can they coexist trope if it makes sense. And I think that one's a good one because they both are envious of what's on the other side, right? So I'm not mad about that. I think that's a great selling match too for Scotland, like to move tickets. I think that'll actually do it. This was all a whole bunch of fun. I'm hoping it's leading to women's blood and guts. Whoever wants to jump in first, go for it.
Okay, I will.
You guys are too chivalrous. Whenever I do that, you're both like, you go ahead. No, you go ahead.
You hang up.
A gentleman.
You hang up. No, this is a fun match, a fun multi-competitive match. You know, they had multiple ones of those tonight. But Queen Amidala is always a treat to watch. And I thought, you know, her getting her chocolate kisses to Mercedes was very lovely for the internet to have. So they can do with that what they will. Really enjoyed a lot of the power of the match. Liked Willow doing her Brody King call. No. Barking cannonball. Thought that was a fun little shout.
That and then, ruled.
And then, yeah, I think the booking made sense to me. The way that, you know, Alex is hot right now. You give her the win going into Forbidden Door and everything else. And Sky is there to take the pin, which I was kind of wondering why Julia wasn't wrestling in this one. But it makes sense if Sky's going to take the pin.
I agree. You know, one thing that was so funny when I saw like Mercedes joining the triangle was like, there's all the like creative control ego stuff. And I'm like, this woman will play ball with anything. Like she's jumping into the triangle hand holding thing. Like, yay. And I like that you pointed out the, like with Alex Windsor, I didn't realize that she had the silly goose side to her. I've known her to be such a badass, but no better person to consult about being a silly goose than Ryan over here. Your thoughts on this?
Love a good silly goose. I'll be honest. And it's not a knock on her. I wasn't thrilled Mercedes was in the match only because I liked that you have an established women's trio. Like, why wouldn't they be the trio in the match? I understand why they did it, but just that's one of those little things that irks me where I like established teams to be the team when it wrestles. We'll talk about that in our main event, how much I enjoyed that. But she fit in really well, and she was very funny with her interactions with the three of them. So I can't really criticize that. And she's obviously great in the ring. The babyface team was just a lot of fun. You know, Willow is just a delight. Windsor has really shown up again, you know.
I don't know if she was
intended for all this, but it's one of those things where she stepped in, and is, I think playing off Toni Storm has helped her a lot, because I think it's given her a role that they might not otherwise have. I was a interview a couple weeks ago where she's like, she made a dirty pun. She's like, and now I'm doing it. And I just started cracking up. That
she was talking about last licks and licking everything and getting her licks in. She's been really good. And I do feel like it was by design. It might have maybe not supposed to take it off this far, but like, she walked into a world title program, and to your point, just delivered on every beat so far.
You know, Laurent Ford has a good point in the chat where he's saying Windsor got a much better intro into AEW than Deonna did. I feel like Deonna would have benefited from this type of use for a little while, where it's like consistent letting us learn who she is.
She pretty much walked into a program with Tony too. They just didn't sustain anything out of it. Don't forget. Like, she walked into a really good and deeply rooted feud.
I think what his point is, and at least the way I'm interpreting and agreeing with, is that it's the consistency of her use versus the consistency of Deonna's use. That Deonna wasn't wrestling a whole lot during that time. Like, she was doing vignettes. So like, if you can consistently just let the wrestler be around, it helps. Now they could do what they always do, and then Windsor could disappear.
Yeah,
and
be like, all right, they did it again. I think the stupid thing with Deonna is like, let her wrestle, right? But when she came in, like, she was the first person to drag Toni Storm back to color too. Like, they did a lot of really good work around it, but Deonna's biggest strength is being in the ring. They should have just kept her on TV. So
yeah, I guess that's my point, is like, they didn't, there was not a consistent effort to keep her in the ring around it. And I think that was the problem she ran into. But either way, the star of this whole thing to me though is Aminata, who is just stepped up huge and doesn't look out of place at all. She fits perfectly in every story they're telling. She's a powerhouse, which I think is great, because a lot of the female powerhouses are all now leading heels. So it's great to have one with Statlander going more heelish. It's great to have another one on the face side. She's been perfect. And Tiny Tekla has just been a great fit for AEW. I wasn't sure. I didn't know about her, 'cause I'm not the biggest Japan follower. Man, she fit in perfectly.
She also like got injured so early in her AEW run, and then just kind of came back, and they were like, oh shit, yeah, I forgot this woman was signed and what she can do and all these things. So good to see all that. Good to see all that. But let's talk about the Tokyo Dome match of the night. Okay, we got Adam Copeland versus Big Stoke. Stokely's trying to run away. I loved the gear with the FTR rainbow stripes on the side. I thought that was fantastic. This was extremely silly. You had all the comedy in the world for this. Stoke with those exaggerated spears, I thought was phenomenal. Not facing Adam Copeland at all. I loved the... Normally, I don't like this stuff, but today it just worked for me. The pulling of hose, I thought was just very funny from Adam Copeland, of like, what do you think of this guy? And he's like, that guy can't get any hose. And he's like, do we have any hose in the house tonight? And women just volunteering, I thought was all very, very funny. But some powder to the eyes, because no, Adam Copeland does not see clearly on this day. We have Christian Cage making the save, and he comes in with the bat. And Adam Copeland has the chair. And I love that they have both of each other's, like, things. And we get a hug from the crowd, which, honestly, I thought this was going to be the case. I thought this would have happened on All Out in Toronto. Like, I unless they're going to be wrestling on the show. We do get a tag match with them versus Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian, who I'm very excited is getting a rep on an important spot on Forbidden Door out of this, because he's been ready for a while. So good to see that. Good to see them working with some younger talent in this program. But they're officially reunited on the back of Stokely Hathaway, and I'm surprised Stokely's not in the G1, but if he's not going to be in the G1, I guess this is a suitable. program. He's just a very entertaining wrestling.
You kind of cut out there a little bit. Did you have a question for one of us?
Oh, I'm sorry. I threw it to Joe.
Oh. Yeah, seeing Stokely come out in the Stokes vs. Cope match in his FTR warm-up and gear, it reminded me of the quote from the great Billy Hoyle of, you know, you'd rather look good and lose than look bad and win. And I think that's what Stokely had.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was the right amount of time for, you know, this little comedy of a match and to help advance the storyline of Copeland and FTR.
You know, there's an art to the sub 5-minute match, and I think it was just a beautifully told story here, you know?
The best thing to do without having women involved in the match, you know?
Yeah, look at that. My God.
I felt like this whole reuniting of Copeland and Christian felt like a little fast. Some already booked that tag match.
After he found himself pretty quick.
Yeah, like, after that awesome hug.
Yeah.
Offer one side of the hug, and then to have them, you know, team against Christian and, or not Christian, against Nick and
Kip.
Oh, there, Kip. I'm going to call him Zach. Kip. It just felt a little fast, but I think it'll be good for them to have a little warm up, tune up tag team match and have their not on the same page type of things out of the way before they go on to face FTR.
I agree. I'm intrigued to see what happens with the tag titles there, because if they make that a triple threat and MJF interferes to cost the Hurt Syndicate, that's a good way to get the titles off of them. You could do they don't hot potato a lot. You could have FTR beat the Hurt Syndicate and then turn it around. So there's some interesting possibilities, but I think you're probably leading to a Christian Cope, a Chris Cope run. Ryan, do you think this is totally awesome? Like Christian and Edge back in the day?
Christian Cope, that's an interesting one. This match was well laid out. I think it was genius by Copeland to interact with the crowd because it kept it from feeling stale. A lot of times these beatdowns are solely in the ring, and if like a mic is involved at all, it's just the wrestler talking to the other, and the crowd just never gets into it then, because eventually it gets very boring to see it. So working the crowd made it funny and interesting. So that was a great choice. I mean, and the hoes knew they were hoes, and everyone knows they're hoes.
Gotta get me some boats and hoes, as the old saying goes.
Boats and hoes. Now, I loved the hug between Christian and Cope, but I will admit they're going to have to convince me what happened with Christian, because only a few weeks ago he was like, hey, I'm an asshole. So like, and truthfully, it's probably not that hard to back away from, to be like, I'm still an asshole, but I went home and realized you were one of the few people in my life or something like that. Like, there's a story you could tell there. But I just hope they do try to at least tell it. And I'm with you on giving Kip Sabian the shot. I'm a big Kip Sabian fan. You know, he's been awesome, and he deserves to finally actually wrestle a little bit. So let's go.
I'm wondering if they give Sean Ross Sapp everything he's ever wanted, which is the Lex Luger Sting dynamic tag team of, yeah, he's an asshole, but he's my guy. Which I think could be a fun direction, because that's who we've known Christian to be for such a long time at this point. But let's move along to our 8-man tag. This was a very we're throwing this card together kind of program. But we get this 8-man tag with Brody King, Ishii, Hiromu Takahashi, which I have some feelings about, and Hologram, versus, kind of feels like it could be Brodito, but it's fine, versus Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander, and the Young Bucks. This was so much fucking fun to watch. Like, I had a blast watching this. Lucha Brody King just wiping out everybody always gets me. The Bucks super kicking Justin Roberts, later getting fined $10,000, which I don't think they could afford on this job or salary. But the closing of this has Hiromu countering a C4 spike into the time bomb for the pin. Now, I have no interest in a Hiromu Kyle Fletcher match. I feel like they could put on a really great match. I just, as someone that does follow a little bit of New Japan, like there's like eight guys I would have picked before him, even in the even if you were like nobody from the G1 can do it, I would be like Despy's right there. Like there are so many more interesting possibilities to me. That being said, I think like Kyle Fletcher could definitely pull an awesome Hiromu match over, and I think Hiromu has something very fun to play with the crowd. But of all the people that I would line up for Kyle Fletcher, Hiromu is like not even close to my top 10. But this match was very, very fun to watch. The Young Bucks like continuing. They get no entrance today. It's just extremely silly. Extremely silly. But Ryan, what do you think?
Huge.
I know you're a Hiromu stan.
Really, really stood out for me.
Huge.
And they got an entrance. They got their nicknames and everything. Mr. Instant Replay. It was there. They just didn't have their music, you know. We're going to go back to what I was talking about with Mercedes in the triangle match, whereas the heel team all made sense. They all had some ties to the Callis family. You had the actual Callis family and the Bucks, who have like a loose affiliation at the moment. The faces, we're back to conglomeration days where it's like, you're a happy-go-lucky guy, you're on my team, let's go. And that was just kind of very funny to me that it's like, we'll just grab anybody. Brody King, you're a big bastard. Let's get you in here. And, you know, it worked. And it did work. You know, somehow well, I guess it helps that all those guys are very, 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 very good at the ring. So, though, you know, you joke about me and Hiromu, but I think I've seen him wrestle live a handful of times, probably more than I've seen most wrestlers. So he's my guy. Let's go. 90s guy, you know, with his look. So
you weirdly have seen Hiromu live like quite a few times now.
A lot. Like it's not an exaggeration. I've seen him probably a handful of times. So, and that's more than most wrestlers. So, I mean, the match was fun. It's a clusterfuck and I enjoy it, but it's a good clusterfuck where they're all over the place. But I just laughed at the heels, they have a clearly defined relationship with everyone. And the good guys are just thrown together. But I, like you said, I do appreciate the Bucks kicking Justin Roberts, because at some point, even though they're not EVPs, they should do something if someone's being a jerk to them. So finally, some kind of response.
I think it is a very funny way to get to Hiromu versus Kyle Fletcher when Kyle Fletcher already put out an open challenge. Like, I'm going to answer your open challenge with three other guys with me. It's extremely silly. But sometimes AEW is like, fuck it. This match is going to be awesome in the ring. And so that's what you're getting. Joe, your thoughts on this?
For where the match fell on the card, like in that usual weird slot of time on Dynamite, where it's usually reserved for the short women's match, the way they put this match together fit that time slot for me. Like, it's kind of a weird throwaway match of sorts, to your point, to get to that Kyle Fletcher Takahashi match at Forbidden Door that some people will be excited about. I will be mildly excited about, I guess.
Sure.
I think the thing I took away from the match really was the fact that Hologram is quietly 29-0, working on that Goldberg streak.
I kind of want him to lose to Max Caster. And I know there's a lot of people that will hate that because he's 29-0, but he doesn't have title shots with his undefeated record. So I think him losing to the guy who does nothing but lose could actually be very, very fun. But
it has to be so cheap.
Of course. Of course. Has to. One thing we didn't talk about was Will Ospreay returning. Not sure how I left that out of my notes, but Will Ospreay returned. And I love that he just kind of acknowledges that this Forbidden Door build has been kind of weak. Great to see him. Like, he wasn't meant to be out long term, but obviously he's doing well if he's able to return on time. That's great news. He challenges Jon Moxley and says, your friends versus my friends in a lights out steel cage match. And by the end of the night, we find out who is on everyone's side. And I love that Will pulls Darby and he confirms Tanahashi in an interview with Renee Paquette. And we later find out that the Golden Lovers, Ibushi and Kenny Omega, are also in this thing. That's an insane face side of things. Later, we get this extremely charming interview with Jon Moxley, where he's being interviewed. And I think it was Alicia Atoot says, like, hey, they've confirmed Tanahashi. Who's going to be on your side? And he's like, Tanahashi? Like, New Japan Tanahashi? Like, Tanahashi is the most threatening guy in the world to him. His retirement run. Like the Tanahashi? Like, the ace? Like, Hiroshi Tanahashi? I thought it was so adorable. But we do find out it's going to be Cesaro. Gabe Kidd, who is coming back from a knee hyperextension, I believe, that pulled him from the G1, which is a shame. I bet he was supposed to go far in that. And the Young Bucks. So you get, that's a badass team. You've got Gabe Kidd, the Young Bucks, and Mox and Cesaro versus Darby Allin, Will Ospreay, the Golden Lovers, and Tanahashi. Tana's looked much better of late. His G1 was pretty solid. I don't think he'll have to do a whole heck of a lot in this match. But we also get a little chit-chat scheduled, a talky-talk, if you will, between Ospreay and Jon Moxley for the Big Scotland that's coming up. So a lot of build happening on this show for Forbidden Door. Because you guys are too chivalrous to each other, I will immediately throw to Joe.
Quite the teams. They were really kind of thrown together quickly. I'm glad we're setting up in this, you know, lights out, steel cage match. I think that's probably the right move for some of the talent, especially for Tanahashi being involved. I feel like, you know, doing something like that is probably better for him than doing a full-blown, like, blood and guts type of match. Otherwise, yeah, I think I didn't realize Gabe Kim was going to be back that fast after his. I knew he was out for the G1, but I thought he was going to be a little bit longer. But so I'm glad to see he's back. But other than that, yeah,
I think it was tricky because. Sorry, I'm lagging. My apologies. I think it was tricky because it was a knee hyperextension, I believe, which is not like a. It's not a bad injury, but the schedule of the G1 is such that you're just wrestling so many fucking days in a row that it was like, until they realized, like, no, you can't wrestle for a week, they had him forfeit his first two matches and then say he's not participating in the G1 because it's not a severe injury. It's just like, it just happened at the very beginning of the G1, unfortunately. So I'm glad that he's back. And these are all guys that I think can do a lot of damage, but you can also hide a lot of shit in a match like that. Cause it's not, like you said, it's not like a wrestling match. Any thoughts on all this build, Ryan?
It's sure as a build. I did laugh. I was like, you have friends, I'm going to get my friends. And then his friends, once again, good guys, just a random assortment of people. Really appreciate that. But you were dead on with Mox's interview about Tanahashi. You got Tanahashi? Like, Pedro pointing out in the chat, very good. The poor Bucks were stuck in the extras room. Such a good touch.
So great. So great.
And they didn't show you for a little bit, so you weren't sure who they were going to. And you're like, who are these guys just back there stretching? Listen, the match is going to be awesome. There doesn't need to be a lot of build around it, to be quite honest, because you only need a couple guys to hate each other. And everyone in the match has history. So
that part.
That's the one. That is the good time of using wrestlers' past with each other, is like, then you don't need to create a lot of story. If everyone has history with one each other, they're going to want to fight one another. And it just fits. I thought he was going to say blood and guts, and then he went lights out cage match. I'm like, why?
Well, because I don't think they want to fit two rings in the O2. I think that's probably a big part of it. You're eating up a lot of chair spaces. So it's going to be the same violence in One Ring, I think is what we're getting at. But I'm very excited for that. And I'm the same way. Like for Forbidden Door, I'm like, just give me an all-star game. I don't need a ton of build. Like AEW has gotten so much better about their pay-per-view build pacing this year. I'm like, if this one is off because it's happening the same time as the G1, when it's essentially a giant all-star game where no titles are going to change hand anyway, like I don't need like, well, where's the story? It's fine. Like just give me something. But like there was also nothing interpromotional announced for a really long time. So I think people were like, hello, but we're probably getting Zach and Nigel, so I don't give a fuck what the rest of the card looks like. I'm already happy. Yay. We get this awesome promo. The promo itself is actually a little awkward. I don't know what happened with Swerve and Okada, but both of them were just kind of tripping over their words a little bit today. But I love that Swerve owns this shot of the crowd is in back of me doing the Whose House Swerve's House thing right now. And he does his interviews in front of the live crowd. That's like now a Swerve coded thing. And I think it's just like perfect guy, perfect setup. Like the crowd always goes nuts for him with it. And I think it's such a cool shot in itself. But he's got a knee thing going on. And he says, injury or not, he's going to come after Okada and take that title. And Okada interrupts and mocks his knee and says, like, you should just quit now because there's no way in hell you're going to beat me with your injured knee, bitch. And Swerve shoves Okada and we get a little security pull apart. I when there's been so many real injuries, I don't need a, is this going to keep you out of the match thing? Even if Swerve is really banged up, like I just don't need it brought on screen because we have so many real ones right now that are keeping people out of action. This is fine. I think they're just trying to drive home that this is supposed to feel important, but it's Okada and Swerve. So it feels important to me. I'm good on that. Ryan, we'll start with you and then we'll flip to Joe.
I'm with you. I love that this is Swerve's interview style. I hope they do it with no one else for a long time because it will feel unique that it's his. It was like a stilted interview. No one felt comfortable, which is weird because they're both usually so comfortable in these situations, but it happens. It wasn't bad. It just felt less comfortable than I was expecting. I think the knee thing is not like, oh, will he not be in the match? It's more like one, this, like you said, this is how much it matters to him. Two, look how tough our babyface hero is. And three, if he loses, which I kind of think he will, it gives him an out. Oh, he was hurt going into that. Like it's your
excuse for a rematch the whole nine.
Yeah, without having to do like an insane finish. So, but yeah, wasn't the best segment.
Joseph,
I'm agreeing. I don't think I need any more talk between these two. I'm just, you know, I don't think you need a lot of talk between them to begin with.
We're going to talk about Samoa Joe in a second, but it's the Samoa Joe approach of, if I talk to this guy so much and I don't throw hands, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm here to fight you, not to yip-yap every week for a while. And I love that mentality from Samoa Joe, who main events here with Powerhouse Hobbs and Shibata versus LFI, which is Rush, Realistico and Mystico / Muertos, depending on where you're at. The Ops win this. I don't know why it was non-title if the Ops were going to win anyway, but it was. You have Hobbs and Joe just being pump-up the powerhouses early in this. LFI isolating Shibata, Rush taunting him. These guys just hit really fucking hard. And Hobbs just running through Muertos and Realistico. And we get Joe tagging in and locking in the Coquina clutch, or I forget what commentary called it, but I think they called it the Kikina clutch, which was very silly. But this whole episode was like, here are some very fun multi-man matches that we're using to elevate a lackluster pay-per-view build very quickly. Like that's fine. That's fine. Wondering if the Ops are going to face someone like a trio on the New Japan side. I don't know who that would be. But I was just glad to see them back in action because it's been a minute. We did earlier in this episode get the send hook bat signal which is good. Seems like he's on his way back after being out for a while with a concussion. So some good stuff with the ops, Joe. It's Samoa Joe, so we'll start with you.
Fair enough. My one thing was I wish it would have been a little bit longer a match, considering the two trios teams and how they've kind of been, a thorn in each other's sides. I wanted them to go a little longer, but, otherwise, I thought, like you said, I think a lot of the match was just, some of the guys just kind of playing the hits since they only had a confined amount of time to work in.
Which is funny because we got an overrun.
I know.
Every time we get an overrun, I'm like, I know exactly where I would cut the extra 4 minutes off or whatever. I can always find exactly which match.
So I'm hoping that we get run it back at least one more time so we can get a little bit more time. But I'll never turn down seeing Shibata and Samoa Joe on my TV.
Yeah, I'm also kind of relieved, honestly, to hear that Hook is on his way back because it's been a minute.
Well, how they left it off with the whole tease of was there dissension with him and Samoa Joe because him feeling like he got replaced.
So what I had heard was that was supposed to play out, but Hook did some in-ring stuff and then immediately threw up, which is you still have a concussion 101. So now it feels like it's been lingering forever, but that's not part of the story. It's just unfortunately where he's been medically. But Ryan, I'm going to put you in a coquina clutch. So I just am letting you know that. There's no way out of it. Unless you give me your thoughts right now on this main event. You could avoid my wrath. I didn't say this second, but next time I see you or the time after.
I just want to see you try.
Well, okay, then don't give your thoughts.
You've been going to the gym a lot more now. I mean,
I have.
I still have my doubts, but...
kick you in your knees, take you out?
I still have my doubts. I'll kick you in your knees. It's not like you...
I don't have a weak knee. I just have bone spurs. They're just crackly. Oh. They just are so loud every time I go to do anything. My trainer was like, "You feeling all right on the leg press?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, no, it's just Rice Krispies in my knees. It's just snap, crackle, pop. But they don't hurt. They're just noisy." But anyway, I'm going to take you out at the knees and put you in the coquina clutch. But tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, we'll see about that. But I did like that you had two established trios in a match. It wasn't, putting just random people together. These were two established teams, and I love that. That made me very happy. I don't know why it wasn't for the title either, but oh well. These two teams actually matched up very well together, if you really think.
Yes, they did.
Each had power guys, each had some size on them. Roosh is a big guy, so when he lines up against someone like Powerhouse Hobbs, he matches him in size. That was kind of surprising.
Powerhouse Hobbs.
Thank you. See, I just want to go power of love. Burr, burr, burr. Listen, I'm gonna take my chance to sing. If it's there, I'm doing it.
No, I was just thinking because MJF tweeted "ain't seen nothing yet" at the end of the episode, and all I could think of was "baby, you just ain't seen nothing yet." So we're both singing.
I liked that. I love LFI. I hope they do more with them. That's really what I want to say. They're a fun
team. They stay healthy, but they're amazing. I love them.
They have so much. Every one of them, all three, has incredible talent.
Agreed.
So I really hope they do something. And I'm interested to see Hook return to the ops, which it has been so long now that you can't run the story you were talking about where that was going to play out because it just wouldn't make sense. Like, a guy can't be mad that you have someone else with him when he's been gone for months.
I think Powerhouse has even said, he was never out. I think he's gone as far as to either say that on screen or in an interview or something. He was he was never out. I just am also in. So we'll see how that goes.
So, yeah, I loved the main event.
Well, we do have a go-home angle because what's an unnecessary overrun without a go home angle, but this one's well done. We have Hangman Page leaving backstage, getting a quick like interview situation in here, and then MJF just blindsiding him, slamming him into the cars. And the real insult to injury is it's not even an electric car, which is what Hangman drives. So that's upsetting. But good stuff. Like just classic heel babyface stuff. These two, I feel like, are bringing out the best in each other's characters, which I absolutely adore. Like, I think they're both at each other's hearts with a lot of this stuff. And I think that's great. So heel textbook, I'm fine with for this. Any thoughts on the go-home angle? One of you, stop being so damn chivalrous and hop in and say something here. There's a chess match going on. All right, neither of you get to say anything. We're just going to go home on that. That's it. Nope. Joe, plug your cereal blog or whatever.
Well, I think, yeah, I'm interested to see what MJF does.
Too bad. Nope. Time expired. It's like Family Feud. You got the X. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I guess I'll be interested to see how much more MJF can do to Heyman in between now and from the door, since he promised more of me coming. I'm like, you only have about a week left, so.
Yes, and this is what's so weird about the Hurt Syndicate thing, because it would be like, if those who hurt people were to come and hurt Hangman, that would be good, but I don't think it's a swerve. It just doesn't feel that way to me, but Ryan, your thoughts on this? This ending of the shoe.
The ending of the shoe was good. I like angry MJF, violent MJF. He plays the coward so often that when he gets to be a little bit more aggressive, it's fun.
Heyman's always brought that out of him too. Like I remember that with their first feud, it was like, we're not getting the usual MJF. So I'm glad that's continued.
There's a reason Hangman is the main character of AEW. He gets the best out of everyone.
Yeah. Genuinely. It's pretty good shit. Pretty good shit, this cowboy shit, I tell you. You know what? That actually is a nice segue into plugs for myself. I did a YouTube video today on three things to do with AEW that I was dead wrong about. And one of them was I was so hellbent on Ospreay beating Hangman for the title, or for the Owen, rather, to go on to win. And this has been so good. Like, I think it's really, really, really turned in a great creatively driven direction. And I feel like this is the first time that I feel like Hangman has felt like the ace of the company. I feel like he's been the main character, but he just feels like an extra champion this time around somehow. And I'm all here for that. So you can check out that video on my YouTube channel at Miss Kayfabe. I also talk about how I was wrong about Max Caster. I did not know your game. This open challenge thing is working for me, and I thought it was going to be so fucking stupid, but check that out. It's on at my Miss Kayfabe YouTube channel. Could be doing a little more there this week, God willing, but I'll let the fellas plug their own stuff, and I will assign them their roles. Ryan, plug the podcast and your history blog at once.
She's so rude. Whereas Joe and I are gentlemen.
It just has to be in order to things.
Joe and I are gentlemen. You can find me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. You can follow my history blog at Here for History at hereforhistory.com. On socials at Here for History or at underscore Here for History. I got some interesting things I'm going to try coming up, so stay tuned. And there's my turn.
Be an uneducated idiot and not read any of your stuff instead. I feel like that is, I just want to fit in with a lot of people in this country. So I'm just going to ignore your stuff, but that's cute that you're trying.
We love that for you. And we'll just use AI.
I asked ChatGPT to tell me history and it gave me stuff. It's honestly like I can't read because I'm dyslexic. I'm bad at it. And two, history is not my favorite but Ryan does a really great job of making it very digestible. So I appreciate it, and I would recommend checking it out. But there are more important things in this world, like cereal, and I would say
but you also should.
Yeah, it's grab a spoon, people. Grab a spoon. Joe, where can people read about cereals and also just find you?
Sure. On my socials at _AsianJoe, and in my bio of those socials, you'll find the link to my cereal review blog. I am due to do one still, and I swear I'll do it before Labor Day.
Well, you're really letting us down, because I'm obviously remarkably consistent with my content, so...
I'm going to give myself a deadline and I can hold myself accountable.
There you go. There you go. I like this idea. Are you going to review the Wednesday cereals? Interesting.
As in the Wednesday, like, Wednesday Addams cereal?
I think so. Yeah, there's... I forget what it's a twist on. But there is a Wednesday's one. I think you should review the cereals on air. Just as like a trailer. Like, eat it, react, and then write your full...
Mm-hmm.
Full blog.
I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that during the plug segment here. Yeah.
It's cookies and cream.
Ooh, it's cookies and cream. Well, there you go. That's worth it.
Yeah.
Ryan's like, this is now my bit instead.
I'm sorry. I like cookies and cream.
Cookies and cream. Well, that rounds us out tonight. You know where to catch me. Go to Fightful. Go to my YouTube, blah, blah, blah. But we are going to let you know that you can go to ProWrestlingTees.com and pick up a shirt. Honestly, Joe was like, probably by Labor Day, that's probably the best time to get our t-shirts as well. There'll probably be some like Labor Day sale that you can use a coupon code at, but you can pick out any of our four designs. If you see our background right here, it's those, but on a t-shirt. And if you're listening in audio form, how dare you, sirs and ma'ams, watch us for our pretty faces. JK, we appreciate your support. Please leave a 5-star review.
Joe, there's also a confetti cake cereal from Wednesday, so you got that option too.
Team cookies and cream forever.
You try one, I'll do the other.
Why
I love this. But while Ryan is looking up cereal, we're going to ask him to pivot to his producer brain and get ready to say goodnight, because that's what we are about to do. Ryan, take it away.
All right, so I put the outro thing up like this, right? And I go down and make sure the volume's up. And then, and I'm legitimately struggling to find it. I think this is outro. Nailed it.
The Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.